as she swiped falling tears off her wrinkled cheeks. They were divorced, but she still loved him. "Do you have any idea who might have wanted to hurt him?" I asked, hoping the question sounded less awful to her ears than mine. I'd come all this way for the answer. I had to know. "No." She patted her cheeks and took a steadying breath. "Benedict was opinionated, and he wasn't shy about it, but people respected him." "Except that lunatic of an iced tea maker. She's the one who killed him." I gasped. My heart jumped into third gear, and I checked my proximity to the nearest exit. Amelia curled a hand over her lips, and her cheeks lifted in a smile. Lucinda lifted her eyebrows. "What? Hadn't you heard who was responsible?" I chewed my lip, unsure how to proceed. "People are saying the tea maker has an alibi. Maybe Mr. Payne had been arguing with someone else lately. Do you know if there was anything unusual going on in his life?" She seemed to consider the question. "Benedict's entire life was unusual. He was a busy man in love with an island." She gave a soft laugh. "He cared about everything that went on there, and he strived to preserve the place he'd fallen in love with. I always said that place would be the death of him. I just assumed it would be figurative." "Was he butting heads with anyone in particular lately?" I prodded.
"He worked on the town council. He was continuously at odds with someone. Trying to keep things in charm the way he liked was a real drain. Real estate developers hated him. Homeowners weren't much better. Everyone wants to add a business to their private residence these days. It was a pet peeve of Benny's. And anyone trying to open a franchise..." She did a dramatic head roll. "Forget about it."
I chewed my lip, wishing I wasn't so out of the loop on local drama, and trying to get over anyone calling Mr. Payne Benny. "Did you say the gossip blogger had him worked up? Why?"
"You're certainly asking a lot of questions for someone who claims not to be a reporter." Lucinda narrowed her eyes at me. "What did you say your name was?"
The room seemed to grow smaller under her heavy gaze. I began, then trailed off. I looked to Amelia for help. Giving out our names seemed stupid. If I got reported for bothering her, Detective Hayes was sure to lecture me again. Amelia fluttered her eyelids dramatically, then stumbled against my side, the back of one hand pressed to her forehead like a fainting Southern belle. "Goodness, I feel ill. Is it hot in here? I'm afraid I've gone woozy." I gripped the display case to steady myself under her weight. "Oh, dear," I shot Lucinda an apologetic look. "I'd better get her something to drink and find her a cool place to rest. This happens to her sometimes."
"Oh,"
Amelia moaned.
"Do you see the spots?"
I darted for the door while Amelia clung to my side, and we staggered down the street as fast as I could move while supporting her weight. We didn't stop until I smelled waffle fries. "Here," I pulled her into a shop with shave ice posters on the window. The smells of hot fudge and fruit smoothies wafted over me, and my mouth watered. Amelia righted herself with a smile. "I have to tell you, those years of theater have paid off tenfold since becoming an adult." She got in line and ordered a frozen lemonade. I bought a bottle of water and a small sweet tea. The first was to quench my thirst. The second was reconnaissance. Amelia was right. I might as well try all the sweet tea I came across so I knew what else was out there. The waitress typed our order into a tablet.
"Those will be ready for you at the end of the counter."
I connected to the free Wi-Fi while we waited. Lucinda asked if we were from the blog that Mr. Payne was so worked up about. She had to mean the Charm Gossip blog, right? Maybe he uncovered the identity of the person stirring up trouble, and the blogger wanted to silence him. I should probably also see if someone from the town council will talk to me about whatever Mr. Payne had been working on for them. Maybe one of those pesky entrepreneurs did him in. "It's worth a try," Amelia said. "But I like the blog. And it isn't always making trouble. The blogger's identity is a secret, which irritates some people, that's all.
I go on there once in a while to check the local calendar and read funny recaps of events I attend. I've never been offended by what I've seen. Though I'm admittedly not a regular reader. You should check it out. See what you think. The articles are a little sensationalized, and the photos are never flattering. But the information is rarely wrong.
I'm going there now. I typed the URL into the web browser on my phone. The page loaded at a snail's pace. There was a scrolling weather report, a sidebar with water conditions, a tide schedule, coupons for local businesses. I sucked in air as my senior high school photo appeared beside a shot of the outside of Sun, Sand, and Tea.
That's me.
Yeah,
Amelia said. You've been a hot topic for a while now, as I'm sure you've noticed.
Good grief.
I tuck that in my mental files for later. If Lucinda reads today's post, she'll know I'm the lunatic iced tea maker.
Amelia giggled.
That was funny.
I scrolled past the photos, half afraid to read the latest article, written yesterday morning.
What does it say?
She asked, peeping over my shoulder. Sun, sand, and tea. It's to die for.
I tried not to have a stroke.
I can't read it.
I shoved the phone into Amelia's hand. Detective Hayes already made it sound as if Mr. Payne died drinking my tea. I won't survive another hit, especially not like this. Wide scale, and memorialized forever on the internet.
I covered my face with both hands. Read it.
Charm, North Carolina, is known for many things, Amelia began. Wild horses, amazing sunrises, and a rich and storied history, to name a few. The natural treasures, from our shores and bays to our preserves and people, are unrivaled anywhere in the world. And believe me, I've been everywhere. Our humble town is just far enough off the beaten path to be a true hideaway, and close enough to the mainland bridge for folks to return year after year. And what says southern summer days louder than a clean, sandy beach and a jar of good old-fashioned sweet tea? I lowered one hand.
This doesn't sound like a slander piece.
Shh, Amelia waved her fingers at me. A few things happened last winter that got our little town excited for spring. One was the rousing tour of birders, but that's an article for another time. Second was the return of our own Miss Everly Swan. For those of you who are unfamiliar, the Swan family has been a part of our town since the land was settled in 1702. Swan women are a staple in our society, and when we discovered her intentions to open an iced tea shop this spring, we were thrilled. Needless to say, it was a long winter. My eyes stung with relief, shock, and pride. Amelia went on. Everly Sun, Sand, and Tea is everything we'd hoped it would be. As it should be. Everly was trained at the skirt tails of the very best. Her grandmother, Hazel Gray Swan, knew how to make simple things magical, and she has undeniably passed that gift to her granddaughter.
Grandmama,
I whispered. That's it for today. A nod to Grandma Swan and cheers to you. Amelia returned my phone, and I shoved it in my pocket. See? No trouble brewing at all.
Thank goodness.
Especially for the absence of goofy charts and calls for commentary. Just something nice. A college-aged woman in pigtails and short shorts appeared at the counter.
Sweet tea, frozen lemonade, bottled water?
Thanks. We accepted the order and headed for the door. I can't believe the blog mentioned my grandma, I said, nostalgia tickling my nose and making me sniffle. Amelia held the door while I passed through, balancing my water and tea.
Everyone knew your grandma. We all know your great aunts, and we know you. Swans are like unspoken island royalty or something.
Since when? I hugged the bottled water to my ribs and popped the top off the tea for a sniff.
Since always, Amelia raised her eyebrows. Are you kidding?
No. I lifted the tea to my mouth without interest. I could tell by the smell and color that it was a powdered mix plus approximately 10 pounds of cane sugar.
No one's ever said or done anything to make me believe they think our family is more than a little weird, Definitely not special in any particular way. In fact, I always liked how everyone was treated the same in Charm. Hmm. Amelia pursed her lips.
Maybe you never noticed, because you'd never been treated any differently before now.
Amelia pumped her straw up and down in her drink.
This blog coverage will go a long way toward helping all this blow over. Plus, I saw you talking to people in town yesterday. They'll like that, too. It was hard for them when you came home and kept to yourself for the first month or so. Confusing. Like, were you glad to be here? Mad about being here? Leaving? Staying?
I'd had no idea anyone cared. I was so wrapped up in trying to fill the hole left in my heart, buying my dream house and launching a new business.
Yow!
I smacked my lips. Now this is some sweet tea.
Good?
Nope. This is definitely not my competition. But now I'm interested in visiting that specialty shop you mentioned. That could be fun.
Perfect. It's on our way to the outlets.
I tossed the tea in the trash. Too much sugar made me break out, and frankly, I didn't need anything else to worry about. Amelia wrapped her lips around the straw of her drink.
This is so good. What was wrong with your tea?
It was just sweet. No real flavor and no depth. Sounds like my ex. I laughed as we rounded the corner back toward Amelia's car, gulping water between giggles. Maybe it wasn't such a bad thing that Wyatt had gotten away. Things would have been monumentally worse if I'd figured out where I stood with him after an engagement, or worse, a wedding. I took another chug of water, washing the taste of sugar out of my mouth. My attention drifted back to Ocean Dreams. A yellow sign on the door read, "Out to lunch." Strange. We had just come out of there. Amelia shrieked, and I followed her gaze to her pretty red convertible, whose windshield was spattered with white goop.
Oh, no!
She jogged toward her car.
What the heck do they feed the birds around here?
I stopped at her side, about 10 feet from the vehicle.
Is that suntan lotion?
She asked. The familiar scent of coconut and palm oil drifted on the breeze. Then I saw that someone had used the lotion to scrawl letters on the windshield of the car. Stop snooping, or else. I pressed the cold water bottle against one temple.
Yeah, and I don't think that message is from the birds.
Chapter 9. The threat put a damper on our trip, so we called for a rain check on the shopping and rode home in silence. The coconut scent of "or else" wafted over me for the full 20 miles, despite a thorough scrubbing at the closest gas station and a drive-through car wash. The sunblock had slid off Amelia's windshield with ease, but it had seeped into my mind, and I doubted I would be able to wash it away anytime soon. I had to tell Detective Hayes about this, and he would hate it. Amelia made the turn into Charm with care, her hands at 10 and 2, her eyes glued to the road as if she anticipated danger ahead.
"Can I make you some lunch?" I asked. "It's the least I can do. My snooping wrecked our day." "You already paid for the car wash. Don't worry about me."
She pried her weary gaze off the road and gave me a quick once-over.
"How are you doing?"
"Fine," I lied. I'd rationalized my way into acceptance during our quiet drive. "It's not as if I was ever in danger," I said. "Whoever left that note knew where I was. They could have made a move to hurt me, but they didn't."
"I don't understand how anyone knew we were in Duck,"
she said, clearly as baffled as myself. "Not just in Duck," I added. "Someone knew you'd parked in the lot outside Ocean Dreams." Amelia chewed her bottom lip. She flicked her gaze in my direction before fixing it quickly back on the road.
"Do you think Lucinda could have snuck out and left that message on my windshield while we were getting drinks?"
"I don't know." I'd considered that scenario when I first saw the writing on the glass, but it seemed impossible. Lucinda would have had to have been watching when we arrived, but she was nowhere near the front when we first walked inside. Amelia frowned, then her eyes went wide.
What if someone followed us there from Charm?
I pressed tired fingertips to throbbing temples.
I hope not.
The last thing I needed was a killer following me everywhere I went to go with the rest of my bum luck. Sam Smart was the one who'd pointed his finger at Lucinda, so he could have linked me to her or even her store's parking lot. But I didn't tell him when I planned to talk to her. In fact, he was acting so weird that day, I barely got her name and location before he rushed me off.
Did you tell anyone else about our trip? She asked.
Just my aunts. How about you? Amelia's cheeks darkened.
I might have told a few people we were going to the outlets today, but I never mentioned Duck, Lucinda, or her store. I swear.
It's okay, I said, dropping my hands from my temples. Going shopping shouldn't have to be a secret. She looked my way again, sincere blue eyes drowning in apology.
I'm sorry you're going through this, she said.
I'm sorry you got dragged into it this time, I answered. Amelia gave a small smile.
I'm still really glad you're back.
Me too. Amelia snuck glances at me as we rolled slowly through town.
I can't believe no one saw anything. Everyone we asked about the vandalism looked at us like we were crazy. How did they all miss a person writing on my car with a bottle of sunscreen?
I don't know, I sighed. Duck is pretty touristy. Chances are that everyone we talked to was from somewhere else, distracted, focused on their vacation and family. They probably wouldn't notice anything that didn't whack them on the head.
I'm glad you thought ahead enough to take a couple of pictures with your phone. All I could think about was getting the sunscreen off my window.
I knew Detective Hayes would want to see the note, but I couldn't bring myself to call and drag him out to Duck, so a picture seemed like a solid compromise. The midday sun beat against my head, lifting a line of sweat on my brow.
I'm exhausted.
Amelia parked in the sand and grass lot beside my place.
So am I. It's the stress.
My cafe door was propped open. Laughter and Beach Boys music spilled through the screen.
What on earth?
I said, leaning over the dashboard for a better look.
Looks like you're going to have to put a pin in that nap. You've got guests.
I squinted up the steps toward the buzzing of voices. My aunts had keys to the place, but they'd never use them.
If this is a break-in, the burglars are pretty obnoxious.
Everly!
Aunt Fran appeared and picked her way over the sand, barefoot and slowly navigating the incline to my yard from the beach.
There you are!
A man in round glasses followed her, one hand at the small of her back.
Here I am!
I nearly fell over in shock. I hadn't seen either of my great aunts with a man since I was a child, and they were still married. Since then, both uncles had succumbed to separate unique and untimely demises. Happily ever afters simply weren't in the cards for Swan women, it seemed. Sometimes the men died and the women lived long, lonely lives without them. Other times, the men died and the women followed soon after with a broken heart, like my mother. Either way, it stunk. This guy had rolled the sleeves of his dress shirt to the elbows, and the cuffs of his slacks were bunched above his knees. His suit jacket hung neatly over one crooked arm. I dragged my gaze back to Aunt Fran.
What's going on?
This is Henry, a new friend of mine.
Ah, the Civil War general Aunt Clara had told me about. Henry extended a hand to me. When I accepted it, he lifted my fingers to his lips and kissed them instead. Fran watched with obvious approval.
I took my hand back and pushed it into my pocket,
certain I'd never get the feel of his mustache off my knuckles.
Nice to meet you, Henry. This is my friend Amelia. Aunt Fran, you know Amelia.
Fran marched to Amelia's side and squeezed her in a one-armed hug.
I certainly do. I attend her sassy 60s book club on Tuesdays.
How was Duck? Did you have a nice time?
She frowned, then checked her watch.
Wait a minute. It's barely lunchtime. I didn't expect to hear from you until late tonight. What happened to shopping?
A Amelia made a deep, throaty noise.
Something crazy happened. You'll never believe it.
I lifted a finger, requesting a hold on that particular conversation, preferably until I was somewhere else.
Aunt Fran, you haven't told me what's happening up there.
I pointed to my cafe. Please tell me there aren't more people touring my home. Aunt Fran shook her head.
Nothing like that. A few folks at the town meeting seem to be on the fence about your innocence and Mr. Payne's murder, so Clara and I are putting their minds at ease. Apparently there's a rumor saying you came back from college a little cuckoo.
She circled a finger around her ear and crossed her eyes. I'm not sure that's a rumor, I said, rubbing my painfully tense neck and shoulders. Aunt Fran snorted.
They think you set up your tea shop to exact revenge on the town in some sort of ill-conceived notion.
Jeez, Henry chuckled.
I guess you aren't very good at mass revenge. Only one victim.
I looked to Amelia for help. Was this supposed to be funny?
So people are up there sampling my tea to see if it kills them?
Fran waved a hand between us, unable to speak through a bout of giggles. She turned me around by my shoulders and steered me toward the steps.
Hey,
something else registered in my cluttered mind.
What town meeting?
I craned my head for a look at Fran's red face.
Is that where everyone was while I was in town with my wagon trying to give away my samples?
Amelia mounted the steps behind us.
There was a blog notice to meet outside the Nature Preservation Society yesterday.
My heart pumped erratically.
Darn it! I had to start checking that blog.
Was the meeting about me? Fran squeezed my shoulder as we arrived outside the party.
I don't think so. I was a little late. I had to help Henry with the Civil War invitations, and Clara was here with her group from Kitty Hawk. We missed the beginning.
I went,
Amelia said reluctantly. Her voice was a shallow whisper.
I should have said something sooner, but it was so ridiculous.
What did they say? Panic rose in my chest and throat. Why did I feel like a mob was about to light torches and run me out of town?
The meeting was about Mr. Payne, Amelia said. They needed to pull together some details for a town-wide memorial. You were just a side topic. Some of the older folks believe that thing about it being bad luck for swans to leave the island. That's why they wondered if you came back a little wackadoodle.
The curse, Fran said.
My mouth fell open. Again with the curse, I thought to myself. I wiggled free of her grip, my frustration boiling to a head. I needed time to think about the threat on Amelia's windshield and to pull my thoughts together. More than that, I needed to make a good impression on the people in my cafe, despite the fact that I was dangerously close to a nervous breakdown. The cafe doors sprang open, and Clara waved us inside.
Wonderful, she cooed. You're here.
The brim of her large white hat bounced gently with each step. A dozen semi-familiar faces turned to stare as I entered. Everyone seemed a little overdressed for an iced tea shop. Beach casual was the whole point. But I tried to just be happy they were willing to give me a shot. I lifted my hand hip high and smiled.
Hello.
Aunt Clara ushered us to the counter.
When our usual customers stopped coming to Blessed Bee, I made a call or two, she said.
I wanted to be sure they weren't ill, that they didn't need anything.
As it turned out, they simply had a few concerns about what you do here at Sun, Sand, and Tea.
I blinked through the sting of her words. People are boycotting your store now? Because of me?
No, not at all, Clara soothed. Grown people make their own decisions. Anyway, when I heard about their questions, I offered to bring them over and show them around your cafe so they could see for themselves. I hope it's okay we let ourselves in. I was just about to set out a selection of your teas.
I forced a perky smile to cover my frustration and anger. They were avoiding the aunt's store now, too? For what purpose? I imagine the ridiculous blog content posted before the lovely piece on my grandma. It probably examined my diet or upbringing. Something polite but pointed enough to make anxious folks fear shopping or eating honey. raised by beekeepers, and a man died outside her home. Coincidence or something more? Charmers chime in. How much honey do you eat?
It's so nice to see y'all,
I said with as much forced merriment as I could muster.
Thank you for coming. I hope you're having a good time so far. Have you seen the view from the deck? It's a great place for a glass of tea.
Most folks managed to smile. All looked expectant and curious. I slipped behind the counter and grabbed my leftover flyers. Aunt Clara had told me once that locals just wanted the truth. I hadn't been very social in the month or so after I came home, before opening Sun, Sand, and Tea. More like broken-hearted and mopey. Then Mr. Payne died, rumors started, and the only ongoing news source was an anonymously run blog. I almost couldn't blame them for their confusion.
I'm having a party here tomorrow night, and everyone is invited. A grand opening. I want a chance to reconnect with Charm and introduce you to some more of my family's best recipes. I hope you'll come.
I moved around the room with my most congenial smile, putting paper into each hand. Pull back the curtain, I thought. Amelia took a flyer.
Thank you. I'll be there. Right now I'm going to go home and take that nap for you.
I clapped her on the shoulder, wishing I could go too. You're a true friend. The music grew louder behind me, and I turned back to find Aunt Fran and her friend Henry dancing to Kokomo. For a lady who thought the Swan women were cursed in love, she certainly didn't seem concerned about Henry's impending death.
Here you go, Clara called. She lined my counter in clusters of iced tea jars.
Samples! Help yourselves!
She moved little paper teepees in front of each bunch. The flavors were written neatly in purple ink. The group silently exchanged glances. Her smile slowly faded.
Well, help yourself! Don't be shy!
When no one moved, Clara looked to Aunt Fran. My tummy churned. After the day I'd had, I really needed a thread of hope. People couldn't seriously think I'd hurt someone, could they? Until that moment, I'd hoped the town's standoffish behavior would soon pass, that it was no more than the grown-up equivalent of Everly has the cooties. Tears stung my eyes at the realization that this was so much worse than I'd imagined. Hurt crossed Fran's pretty face. She marched to the counter and grabbed the nearest jar.
This one has always been my favorite.
She sucked down several gulps, then smiled at the group. The guests traded strange expressions. When Fran didn't fall over and die, a handful of them moved in her direction, mumbling under their breath to one another and carefully selecting a sample for themselves. To my great relief, they sipped, then smiled. The rest of the guests inched toward the door. Clara's brows furrowed, her angelic face uncharacteristically forlorn.
You don't have to go, she called.
We can play Yahtzee or bridge.
Sit out on the deck.
Henry went to Fran's side and grabbed a jar of tea. He tapped his glass to hers and drank it straight down.
This is fantastic.
He eyeballed the empty jar.
Really, really good. Have you thought of bottling for retail?
I slumped onto a bar stool and dropped my chin into my hands. No. A man in a black jacket and tie took the stool beside mine.
Don't worry about them,
he said.
They'll come around.
I gave the lone encourager a closer look. Mr. Blackstock? My ninth grade history teacher smiled warmly at me, empty tea jar in hand. What are you doing here?
I came to see your cafe. It's very well done.
He patted my shoulder.
And for the record, it's nice to have you back. Not just for the tea.
I wish everyone felt that way. Seeing him again brought a true smile to my lips. Mr. Blackstock had opened my eyes to the history all around me. As a teen, I'd barely thought beyond the present moment, until I took his class. He gave me an appreciation for my aunt's cuckoo obsession with passing family stories along.
It didn't matter if I believed them, or even if the stories were true. Only that they were part of my legacy, formed in the minds and spoken from the lips of ancestors who couldn't possibly know we'd still be repeating them 2 centuries later. The concept was pretty cool if I remember to think of it that way.
I don't suppose you know what Mr. Payne was working on lately. He made a face.
I do, actually. It's funny that you ask, because I rarely had reason to speak with him.
Really? I'd started to feel like a pest for asking everyone I met the same question, but it had finally paid off. Go on, he chuckled.
My wife is on the town council. She handles the calendar, scheduling, you know, that sort of thing, but she attends all the meetings and hears all the drama. She's nicer than me. She calls any issue that comes up dilemmas.
He made air quotes.
One of the council's biggest dilemmas involved Payne battling a local real estate developer over turning multiple historic homes into bed and breakfasts.
Yikes.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. This guy wanted his B&Bs to share a name.
My jaw dropped. A dreaded chain. Good grief. It wasn't exactly a set of Golden Arches or a Hilton, but if the poison hadn't killed him and the B&Bs went forward, he might have had heart failure instead. Who was it?
That I don't know, but I can ask.
He stretched and got to his feet, checking his watch.
Good news. All the suspicion and funny looks? I've got a great historic quote for you. This too shall pass. Everything does. Meanwhile, I've got to go. I came to say hello, but most of the folks who left just now were probably here killing time before the funeral. Now I'm sure there was no offense intended by their sudden departures.
He patted the counter and waved goodbye with a jaunty whistle. Funeral? The word bumbled around in my brain. There's a funeral today? Aunt Clara put Mr. Blackstock's glass in the dishwasher. Mr. Payne's, dear. That's today? Right now? An image of the silent, staring crowd popped back into mind. Now that I thought of it, I realized an unusual number of people had been wearing black. No wonder everyone had seemed so dressed up. They came to the place where they think he was poisoned 10 minutes before his funeral? Amelia was right. People are strange. Aunt Clara came around the counter and slid a soft palm over my hand. I'm sorry that didn't go better. I wanted them to come by, try the teas, and remember who you are. Not just the fact that someone poisoned a man's tea which you happened to brew. Aunt Fran stood at her sister's side and wrapped an arm around her back.
They're warming. Give them time.
How did I not know the funeral was today? I rose to my feet, feeling frustrated but energized. Never mind. I'd missed the town gossip meeting, and I hadn't kept up with the blog. I remember. Nobody tells me anything anymore. I paced in a small circle, formulating a new plan. Aunt Clara, Aunt Fran, I have something to do. Would you mind locking up when you leave? I needed the name of this bed and breakfast developer. They smiled. I kissed their cheeks and shook Henry's hand, then darted upstairs to look for something black to wear. I had a funeral to attend. Chapter 10. I speed walked through town in a simple black dress with matching flats, foregoing the boardwalk for the sake of time and heading for Boardman's funeral home as quickly as I could without breaking a sweat. There were 3 locations for an eternal send-off in Charm, but Boardman's was the most popular and almost double the size of our other 2 options. The breeze grew unseasonably cool as dark clouds rolled onto the horizon and snuffed out the blistering sun. The proverbial April showers had loomed for a week, threatening in spurts but without making good on their promise. I just hoped the storm would hold off until I reached my destination. Outside the local resale shop, I eyeballed a rusty old Schwinn. It was pink beneath the corrosion, with faded letter decals and a filthy white-woven vinyl basket that was partially coming undone. The price tag said $10. Quite a deal for a woman racing the rain to a funeral. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to stop. The funeral home parking lot was full, and Detective Hayes' SUV stood sentinel at the curb. I detoured to a side entrance to avoid him. Was he there as part of his investigation, as a caring new local, or as security? Hopefully the first option. He needed to figure this thing out before I got another threat. I was already nervous to be home alone as it was. I followed the sounds of doom and gloom to a door marked Pain Celebration, then took a seat in the back. The bleeding organ easily covered the soft snick of the door behind me. I crossed my ankles and tried to look as if I'd been there all along. Lucinda was in the front row, leaning on a younger woman. Dozens of charm families filled the seats, mixed with a sprinkling of strangers I assumed were Mr. Payne's family, or folks who'd moved to town while I'd been away. The remaining members of the town council filled the second row. Mr. Blackstock sat beside a small brunette. Detective Hayes was nowhere to be seen. I slouched in my seat, searching each face for someone who looked suspicious, keeping myself on high alert in case the cranky detective appeared and busted me. He'd definitely think it was inappropriate for me to be at Mr. Payne's funeral, given that he seemed to suspect I'd killed him. But imagine the gossip if I didn't come. People would think I'd stayed away out of guilt. It was hard to guess who would approve and who wouldn't, so I had to lay low, do my reconnaissance, and make sure a couple people saw me so they could spread the word later that I'd come to pay my respects. A man in the middle section across the aisle took notice and smiled at me. His bushy salt-and-pepper hair looked premature against his youthful face, but I'd have recognized Martin Payne anywhere. Mr. Payne's nephew had been a man in demand on the beach every summer when we were teens. He'd lived up north somewhere, but spent the weeks between each school year in Charm, making my town his annual playground. I waved in a silent greeting. His smile grew, and I flipped my gaze forward before he drew more attention my way.
"Excuse me,"
he whispered, rising to a hunched position and shuffling past the others seated in his row.
Pardon.
He held his jacket together with one hand and guided himself with the other, using the seat backs as balance. He ducked across the aisle and parked himself on the empty seat at my side.
"Hi."
He shook my hand. "Hi." I forced my attention back to the preacher. Martin crossed his legs and settled in. 20 long minutes later, after some rambling remembrances of what a dedicated man Mr. Payne had been, the mourners were excused. Folks stood and filtered toward the front, congregating around Lucinda. I headed for the hallway, followed closely by Martin Payne.
"Quite a turnout,"
he said once we'd broken free. "Quite," I agreed. His smile remained easy and true as he gave me a long look.
"I can't believe how little you've changed since high school."
I guffawed. That was a total lie, but nice of him to say anyway.
"You remember me, don't you?"
he asked. Who could forget? Martin had left for college and stopped visiting Charm the year I became a junior in high school. Girls had flocked to him back then, and time had been good to him, so I imagine not much had changed. Personally, I'd always preferred rough and rugged to clean and shiny. "I'm so sorry about your loss," I said. My heart ached for him. Martin's smile turned slowly downward.
"I know you didn't kill him,"
he said.
"I hate that he's gone, but please know I don't blame you. I've seen you rescue crabs and worms drying out on the sand or sidewalk. There's no way you could hurt another human being. You jumped in on an escalating argument between me and Ned Kester my senior summer here, remember?"
I scrambled backward mentally in search of the fuzzy memory. "Oh, that's right. I hate bullies." Martin's brows rose over his forehead.
"You thought you were saving me from a bully?"
"Ouch." He patted his chest. "I wasn't?" Confusion muddled the memory. "That guy had 50 pounds on you. What did I walk into then?"
"He just caught me kissing his girlfriend. In my defense, I hadn't been here since the previous summer, so I had no idea she had a boyfriend, and she didn't offer up the information.
Martin rubbed a manicured hand across his lips to contain the smile. Clearly, I'd defended the wrong guy. I chewed my lip and weighed my options. I could ask Martin what he knew about his uncle's death and risk offending him in the process, or I could keep my mouth shut and lose a golden opportunity. Curiosity and the need to end this whole mess opened my mouth. "Have you heard anything more about what happened to your uncle?" I lowered my voice to a whisper, then checked for prying ears. "The detective thought someone had put something in the tea."
"Mom said it was a prescription medicine of some kind. I don't remember what. She was crying. I was shocked."
"Sure," I nodded. "I can't imagine getting news like that. Losing one of my aunts would be devastating. Knowing someone had killed her." My throat tightened until I couldn't finish the sentence. My addled brain struggled to make sense of the new information. Who would have had access to him like this? Someone had been close enough to overdose him with a prescription. I lifted my gaze to his. "Martin, how well do you know Lucinda?"
"Aunt Lucinda?" he asked with a slight laugh. "Pretty well."
"Oh, right.
Why? Are you looking for her?"
He twisted and peered over the crowd still clustered in the viewing room.
"Do you want me to find her for you?"
No, I yipped. No, I shook my head. "I just wondered if you knew how well she and your uncle got along. Someone said they were still in contact and she wasn't very nice." Martin blinked. The intent behind my question seemed to register, and his jovial expression faded.
"Aunt Lucinda had no reason to fight with Uncle Benedict. They've been divorced for years."
"I wasn't trying to be rude," I said. "I'm just trying to figure out what happened that night. Someone knows, but half the people I talk to treat me like I have the plague, and the other half literally run the other way when they see me coming." Martin watched me with furrowed brows. He tipped his head sharply over one shoulder, then moved in that direction. I followed him around the corner to a quiet hallway with a love seat anchored beneath a seascape oil painting. Martin took a seat, hiking one ankle onto the opposite knee and blowing out a long, weary breath.
"I appreciate that you're trying to find out what happened to my uncle, but you don't need to. There's a detective assigned to the case. From what I understand, this guy's the real deal. He's very good."
I bit my tongue and nodded. Martin stretched forward, balancing his elbows on his thighs.
"I can tell you're going to push, so let's get it over."
"Thank you." He shook his head sadly.
"Uncle Benedict had his own ideas about how life in Charm should be. I'm sure you know that. He loved his life here and his position on the town council, but I think the job made him as many enemies as friends."
I lowered onto the cushion beside Martin, unable to disagree. "He made me half-batty wanting ingredient lists for everything in my cafe. But I can understand why he was so adamant. He wanted things done right, and he wanted the best for this town." Long, dark lashes cast shadows across his smooth cheeks. Indecision played on his features.
"This is probably nothing, so if you follow up on it, leave my name out of the conversation, okay?"
I leaned closer in anticipation of whatever news he had to share.
"Of course. There's an entrepreneur in town named Metz. Uncle Benedict said he was a greedy, obnoxious putz who wanted to rezone an historic colonial into a commercial B&B with a gift shop. I guess he's had a construction crew out there on Bayview for a couple of weeks, pointedly ignoring Uncle Benedict's protests against the requested zoning change. Now, I'm not sure how that works, but it was making my uncle crazy."
I made an uh-oh face. That sounded a lot like my situation with Mr. Payne, and even more like the guy Mr. Blackstock had told me about. "Your uncle fought me on opening the cafe at my place, too. When we dug into the records, I learned the property had been rezoned during the Great Depression to allow home-based businesses as long as the owner resided on the property, which I do. So his hands were tied, and I opened Sun, Sand, and Tea 6 weeks ago."
"This guy doesn't even live in Charm," Martin said.
and the property is strictly residential. Always has been.
Which meant Payne would have gone to battle to keep it that way. But how hard was Metz willing to fight back? Do you know if Metz was working on more than one renovation project here? A chain, perhaps? I thought to myself. Martin rubbed his palms against the fabric of his black slacks.
No. Maybe. I don't know. I still can't believe Uncle Benedict is gone.
I set a gentle hand on his. Me either. I offered a tight smile when he looked my way. I'll find out what happened to him. I promise. Emotion glistened in Martin's eyes. He lifted his gaze over my head. The low buzz of a crowd filtered to us, echoing from the main hallway. A few mourners looked our way as they dispersed toward the parking lot, and Lucinda came into view, her gaze locked on me. I bounced to my feet and shook Martin's hand overenthusiastically.
I'd better get going. You should stop by Sun Sand and Tea sometime, I told him. I'd love to make you lunch, maybe a glass of tea.
He smiled.
I'd like that.
There!
Lucinda's voice sliced through the soft murmur of the crowd.
She's with my nephew. Stop her!
I snapped my head in the direction of her voice, but Lucinda was invisible, swallowed by the mass of mourners. A familiar set of steel gray eyes nearly leveled me. Detective Hayes was moving in my direction. Holy teacups! Lucinda had sicked the law on me! I tossed Martin one last wave and made a run for the emergency exit sign at the end of the empty hall. I didn't slow down until I hit Bayview, the newest destination in my mission log. It didn't seem like I'd been followed, which probably meant that Lucinda and Detective Hayes were hounding Martin for information about my presence there, and I was sure to hear about it later. The steady pounding of hammers and whistling of drills drew me to my destination like a tractor beam. Soon, the historic colonial came into view, covered in the construction crew I'd shared my tea samples with.
Hello!
I waved one hand overhead while shading my eyes with the other. A few men took notice. One met me on the sidewalk.
No iced tea today?
His congenial smile was a welcome sight.
That was good stuff.
Something crashed in the distance, and I winced. A string of curses rose from within the regal structure.
No tea today, I said, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
He jutted his bottom lip in a playful pout.
Then what brings you by?
He rocked on his heels and gave me an appreciative look.
You on your way to a party?
Funeral.
I hooked a thumb casually over my shoulder.
I don't suppose your name is Metz by any chance.
I forced a smile, hoping this was the man I'd come to see. The fact we'd already met would make it easier to ask him about his feud with Mr. Payne.
Nah.
Another round of blatant profanity flew through the air. Two men in drooping tool belts bustled out of the home's front door and disappeared into the side yard, hard hats sliding over their heads. A third man emerged with vengeance in his eyes. His high-end suit was a contrast with a dusty work zone. The man before me ducked his head.
That's Mr. Metz. Good luck.
He followed the other workers around the corner, leaving me to face off with the pathological cusser. I squared my shoulders and shored up my nerve.
Mr. Metz?
I used my most pleasant voice in an attempt not to be yelled at.
Hello?
He slid a linen suit jacket on over his pit-stained shirt, then smoothed a hand through his thinning hair.
Hello?
His shoulders were broad and his legs were long. He was over 40, but had clearly been an athlete.
I'm Leo Metz.
He smiled. The tip of a gold-capped tooth twinkled in the sun.
Can I help you, Miss...
Swan.
I reached for his hand to shake.
Everly Swan. I knew a friend of yours, I think. Benedict Payne.
Metz's face morphed from confusion to shock before landing on distrust. He slid his gaze over my ensemble.
I suppose you came from his funeral?
Yes, sir.
He choked out an ugly sound.
You here to accuse me of riding him too hard? Being too disagreeable? Rude? Greedy? Successful? Handsome?
That had taken an unexpected turn. Actually, I was wondering if you'd tell me about your dispute with Mr. Payne. I hear he'd taken issue with your renovation of this property.
Yeah, so?
So, now that he's gone, how will it impact what you're doing here? He barked a humorless laugh.
How will Payne's death impact me?
I nodded my head too quickly. Yes.
Well, for starters, now that Payne's out of my way, I'm ecstatic, thrilled, saving money and moving along as planned.
He opened a palm and gestured to his colonial as if he were a middle-aged game show host.
What about it?
I'm just trying to figure out who hurt him, trying to track his actions those last couple of days. Metz grimaced.
Who cares? Payne was a crotchety old fool who wanted to preserve his notion of what this town was rather than embrace the possibilities of all it can be. This bed and breakfast is going to make us a lot of money. Me and your town. This one and the others I've put bids on are going to bring folks across that bridge who never would have come otherwise. Payne should have been shaking my hand and singing my praises instead of fighting me every step of the way. His death was a blessing. I'll save a fortune in attorney fees by not having to fight him on his nonsense. I'm glad he's gone. Now I can get stuff done. Goodbye and good riddance.
I sucked in air as my feet carried me back a step. The construction site had gone silent around us. Mr. Metz seemed to return to himself with a start. His cheeks went ruddy as he took in the gawking faces.
Back to work!
I opened my mouth to excuse myself, but the words didn't come. Instead, I crossed the street at a jog and kept going. Anyone who would yell at a total stranger like that, in broad daylight, with a dozen witnesses, was someone I didn't trust. And I couldn't help worrying that Mr. Payne's determination to preserve charm had gotten him killed. I collapsed on a bench behind a thick oak tree on Main Street and tried to slow my panicked heart. Mr. Metz hadn't given a confession, but he'd made it clear he was glad Mr. Payne was dead. That felt like a lead to me, and I had witnesses who had heard his cold-hearted statement. I dug my cell phone from my purse and dialed the number I'd saved under Detective Meany. A blustery wind whipped over me, tossing hair into my face and flipping the hem of my skirt over my knees. Goodness! I wedged the phone between my ear and shoulder, then scanned the street for signs of Mr. Metz, Lucinda, or anyone who looked like they might want to shove me in a marsh. The bizarrely attentive white cat from the beach and alleyway caught my eye. Her sharp green eyes locked on mine. Hello, Maggie, I waved.
Detective Hayes,
a deep tenor cracked through the phone. Hi, I said, pulling my focus off the kitty. This is Everly Swan. I forced wads of windblown hair away from my face. Can we talk? He groaned.
Where are you?
Something rubbed against my legs and I screamed.
Everly,
he barked.
What's wrong?
Oh, just a cat, I panted, pressing a palm to my aching chest. I hadn't even seen her cross the street. The ratty-looking feline stared up at me and meowed. I stroked her head and worked my heart rate back toward normal. Detective?
You know the lighthouse on the peninsula?
He asked. Yeah? Why?
Meet me there in 30 minutes.
The line disconnected. I pulled the phone away from my ear and made an angry face at it. I can't walk to the peninsula in 30 minutes, I complained. Maggie rubbed her face against my leg, then darted across the street at an angle and leaped onto the narrow window ledge outside Finders Keepers, the resale shop. The bike! I jumped up and followed her lead. Brilliant! 5 minutes and $10 later, I was the proud owner of a fixer-upper Schwinn. I walked the bike to Molly's, three doors down, for a packet of tuna. The kitty followed, clearly anticipating my next move. Here. I tore the packet open and emptied the tuna onto the sidewalk, then tossed the container into a garbage can. Thanks for reminding me about the bike. I rubbed the top of Maggie's head and scratched behind her notched ear. Meet you at home later? She gobbled the tuna without another look in my direction.
I fit my backside onto the narrow bike seat and started pedaling. 15 minutes later, I'd made it to the lighthouse, where Detective Hayes walked toward me at a leisurely pace on the long gravel lane beside the lighthouse. I hopped off the bike, checking to be sure my dress was back in place. The detective had changed clothes since the funeral, trading the stuffy suit for fitted jeans, a simple white t-shirt, and sneakers. There was a ball cap over his wavy brown hair, and he carried a child on his shoulders, cowboy booted feet bouncing against his chest as they moved. Detective Hayes gripped the boy's calves with both hands and pinned me with a stare.
"You okay?"
he asked. "I'm okay." I tried not to stare at the tiny gray-eyed human he wore around his head, but it couldn't be helped. The wavy brown hair, the mischievous smile, and that dimple. I struggled to swallow the block of surprise wedged in my throat. "Who's this?" I asked as a formality. There was no denying. This boy was Detective Hayes' son. Chapter 11. Detective Hayes swung the pint-sized version of himself off his shoulders and set him on the gravel.
"Denver, this is Miss Everly."
I leaned forward, struggling to add a new adjective to what I knew about Grady Hayes. He was a daddy. "Hello, Denver." The boy lifted one dimpled hand to me. I shook it gently. "It's nice to meet you."
"It's very nice to meet you, ma'am," he said, dropping his hand back to his side.
Denver raised his eyes to his daddy. The detective nodded.
"All right."
Denver turned on his dusty boots and ran back the way they'd come. His thin arms and legs pumped as he raced off the gravel and into the field. A moment later, a pair of ducks took flight. Denver squealed in delight.
"Leave the ducks alone," Detective Hayes called. "They lived here first."
Denver chased them into the weeds, then set them off again. The detective smiled.
"He loves the ducks."
Confusion coiled my brain into a knot as he watched Denver running through the field. There was a kindness in his eyes I'd never seen before. It was a side of him I hadn't imagined, and I liked it. I blinked through the haze of shock.
"He's handsome," I said. "Looks just like you."
The detective's gaze heated my cheeks. I ignored the warmth rushing through me. I hadn't intended to call him handsome, but there it was. I watched intently as Denver raced in circles, arms wide like airplane wings. "How old is he?"
"He'll be 5 next month."
Wow. According to the internet, Detective Hayes was 34, so he'd had Denver at close to my age. What would I do with a baby? I barely remembered to feed Lou. Denver's small frame ambled toward the lighthouse at the end of the snub peninsula, and I cast a sideways glance at Detective Hayes. The sound of tires on gravel drew my attention. Detective Hayes's SUV bounced up the worn and pitted lane. The young, blonde woman I'd seen him with outside the ice cream shop behind the steering wheel. She powered the window down and pushed large designer sunglasses onto her head. "Hello," she said congenially to me before swinging her gaze more pointedly to the detective. "I got that call we were waiting for." "Company's coming in 2 weeks." He gave a curt nod.
"Denver's headed for the lighthouse."
Her eyes scanned the horizon, sticking on something mid-sweep. "Chicken for dinner."
"Yep."
She powered the window up and rolled on, heading for the little boy and the lighthouse. I dragged my attention back to Detective Hayes, forcing my gaping mouth shut. She'd said, "Company's coming in 2 weeks," as ominously as if that would be the last day of the world, then simply added, "Chicken for dinner," like it was a completely sensible follow-up. My mind overflowed with questions, none of which had answers that were any of my business. Like, how old was she anyhow? She looked like a baby. Very early 20s, I guessed, which would have practically made her a child when they'd gotten married, if they were married. My gaze slid down his arm in search of a wedding band on one of his long, tan fingers. Nothing.
not even a white line to suggest a ring had ever existed.
"She's not his mother,"
he said, following my gaze.
What?
I jerked my head up. His eyes were already on mine.
"Denise."
He nodded in the direction of the SUV.
"She's not Denver's mom."
Oh. A nonsensical wave of relief washed over me. It's none of my business. He locked his hands over narrow hips, fingertips resting on a gun holstered on his belt.
"Denver's mom died 3 years ago."
I kicked the stand down on my Schwinn, captivated by the unexpected peek into his private life. "I'm so sorry."
"Yeah, me too."
Profound sadness pooled in his eyes.
"Cancer. I know people are going to ask."
"I wasn't." He nodded.
"We came here for a fresh start, but it feels a little like losing her again every time I have to say she's gone."
I forced a tight smile. "Well, if it makes you feel any better, you'll probably only have to say it once or twice around here. The town gossip will take care of the rest." He chuckled softly.
"It helps."
I knew I shouldn't pry, but my insatiable curiosity reared its rude head once more. "Is that why you left the Marshal Service?" He didn't answer. I kept babbling on. "It sounds like you had an impressive career." According to the articles I'd binge-read that first night, he'd been a local hero in Charlotte. "You led a violent fugitives task force? A successful one that landed your name in the papers a dozen times in the past 5 years. You apprehended more than 100 known criminals and reduced crime by 20%. My voice rose with enthusiasm on each new count.
"You've done your research."
"Yeah, but I couldn't figure out why you'd leave success like that behind." I'd assume the reason was something bad that he'd done.
"Amy died,"
he said.
"And suddenly I couldn't go undercover anymore. I couldn't work unending hours. I was a widower with a toddler. A grieving father to a confused kid who didn't stop asking for mama for 4 months.
Emotion glossed his eyes and he lowered his gaze from mine.
For weeks, all I wanted was for him to stop calling for her. And the minute he did,
he pinched the bridge of his nose. My heart clenched, waiting for his next words. Instead, the crunch of gravel returned, and the SUV passed us, Denver and Denise waving from the car. When the vehicle was nothing but taillights, he turned to me as if he hadn't just shared his heart-wrenching truth.
"You and I have some ground to cover,"
he said.
"I just can't decide if we should start with what brings you here, why Lucinda wanted to have you removed from the funeral home, or why you ran away when you first saw me on the boardwalk the other night."
I had no idea. I was just thankful, if we were talking about me, that he didn't want to hear my sob story about a cowboy who didn't return my affections. Knowing what Detective Hayes in Denver had been through put my mess into perspective, and I decided right then that I wouldn't let my past hurt me anymore. I'd shed enough tears for the loss of a dead-end relationship, and it was time I started looking forward again. If the man beside me could carry on, there was no reason for me to wallow. I took a deep breath, letting the excessive drama of my day snap back like a rubber band. "I'm here to report a threat," I said, "and I have a new lead for you in Payne's murder. Maybe two." His eyelids shut and he murmured for several long beats. I inched closer, trying to understand the words. "Are you counting down from 10? He opened his eyes, spread his fingers wide, and exhaled.
"Go on."
"Wait a minute. What was that?" I said, motioning between us. "What did you just do?"
"It's a relaxation technique. I looked it up online after meeting you."
"Ha ha." His cheek ticked up.
"I'm not kidding. Start at the beginning and don't skip any details. I need to know everything you've been holding back."
"Okay." I mimicked his relaxation technique. Then I let him have it.
unloading it all, from the strange visit with Sam and his finger pointing at Lucinda, to my trip to Duck and the sunscreen threat left on Amelia's windshield, all before stopping for a breath.
Anything else?
I nodded. I was just catching my breath. I also spoke with Martin Payne at the funeral, and he pointed me to Mr. Metz, the guy renovating the colonial on Bayview. So I talked to him, too. Oh, wait. Martin asked that his